Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Back Porch Education Podcast. And as always, I'd like to start stuff off with a poem.
Now, I'm going to interrupt you and say that
if, already?
Right. Before you get a poem out again.
Okay.
Right. I want this opening monologue where I get to read something to the audience that I brought with me. And so I came dragging William Shakespeare behind me today. He was kicking and screaming, but here he is. And so if you don't mind, I'm doing Shakespeare.
No, I actually let me say something about that. I think that Steve, by and large, you're a great sport when it comes to all this poetry stuff, because, you know, I usually don't tell you what it is beforehand and I just bring it and then it goes right to you and you have to cobble something together. So I think it's totally fair that the tables are turned today and I'm scrambling to figure out where we're going with this
thing. I'll warn you that there's a question posed and I'm going to ask you answer at the end of this soliloquy that I think most people will recognize, but maybe not see immediately how it applies to what we're talking about today. It starts off this way. See if you've heard this. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep, no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to, 'tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come when we have shuffled off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the pangs of despised love, the law's delay, the insolence of office, and the spurns that patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietest make with a bare bodkin? Who would fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary life, but that the dread of something after death, the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns, puzzles the will and makes us all rather bear those ills we have than fly to others that we know not of. I think most of you know that the soliloquy goes on a little bit further, but what I wanted him to say to us, he's got said, and he did ask the question, you know, Jason, should Hamlet off himself or not?
Right. Well, the existentialist picked this question up, right? I think maybe we would turn to other sources first when answering a question as serious as that, but they do take that question seriously, Sartre and Camus and company. So the question, let me try and get my arms around it. Who would bear all the bad stuff of life? Right. What's the thing he himself a quietist make that? Yeah, that's what you're talking about. Suicide, basically.
Yep. Just flip that switch and all this trouble. Of course, it's Hamlet. And so if you want to talk about trouble, you know, dad's dead because uncle killed him. Mom has married uncle. Girlfriend isn't speaking to him. The whole world is upside down. Hamlet's got it rough, but he's there quietly contemplating that ultimate flip of the switch. And
right.
And he's brought up short by fear. Mm-hmm. Fear of the unknown.
The undiscovered country.
Yep. I would love to sleep like that. Boy, would I love to just get in bed and never get up again.
Uh-huh.
Put me six under. I don't mind. But in that sleep, there might come a dream that I can't wake up from. And that's worse than any nightmare I might have had. Especially in his Christian culture, to him, to say yes to his question is to cost him his soul, right?
Right, exactly.
The suicidal will not see heaven. So I start with that because you and I have talked that today we want to try and tackle something. And there's really two ways to talk about it. I want to talk about it both ways. I think that the product most of us want, the mind frame, the state of heart that most of us in education want to produce in our students is that of joy or love.
Absolutely.
We want them to come away from the experience they've had in our classroom, certainly in love with us, we hope, but much more in love with that which they have been taught, found joyful to know more. And yet the biggest bump in the educational road that I keep running into 30 years into this thing is what I think is kind of the opposite of joy, which is fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to develop that today and talk about the fears and the joys that education should be producing and is producing and how we could maybe turn some of those fears around into joy. But especially parents, so I guess I kind of want to focus there. We could focus on the fears of students, and maybe we'd reference them to our "How to Be the Worst Teacher Ever" and just say, you know, hope and pray you don't get a teacher like that. But but especially for parents, the people responsible, at least in the early years, for education, for providing the right education for their children, you know, Just to sort of spread the table and see where we go, I see the fear of the school itself, that somehow sending them to this mm-hmm. school, whatever kind of school that might be, is obviously going to mold and shape them. And is this, what do I look for in a school? How do I know that I'm making the right choice? The fear that they won't get into the school they want them into, especially college, is very prevalent in education. Right.
Oh, for sure. Well, and even within the school, so we're talking about kind of the fear of parents at this point, or no, what parents fear, right? Parents' fears, that's what we're talking about. And I think a big one would be how is my child perceived at school? Like what relationships are developing? You know, what relationships are my children developing in school? Like, who are they hanging out with? How are people treating them? You know, like are they being bullied? Are they bullying? What kind of relationships are they forming with their teachers? Do their teachers like them? Are their teachers mean? I think relationship is a huge issue, a huge point of concern and worry and ultimately fear in parents.
And I'm concerned, too. Maybe even fearful, that in some ways the way we do school itself, at least the typical experience of quote-unquote school today,
mm-hmm.
is fear engendering, or at least makes people nervous. It may not push them all over into rampant fear.
Sure.
But the pressure, the way we grade, the way we, the expectations we put on kids, the size of the schools,
mm-hmm.
All, you know, even an adult entering into a school setting has some apprehensions that could easily become real fears with very little help.
Definitely.
And I I feel like I need to ring the bell and be the little 3-inch man running around on the podcast, ringing a bell for a moment and saying caveat, caveat. I don't want to imply for a moment that I think fear is just always bad.
Okay, that's a fair point.
There is a fear, I am told, someone has written somewhere, that leads to wisdom.
That's right.
Right. The fear of the Lord leads to wisdom, and that needs unpacking in some other podcast. I'm not arguing against proper fear. I think that it should be clear by the time we're done anyway. I'm arguing against illegitimate fears.
Well,
fears,
yeah, and it sounds like what you were just talking about there is, how can I say this? How, like, structural or institutional fears, like how the structure of the school system is functioning today, that is maybe like there's some inherent fear causing stuff in there. And we'll pick up that interesting question when we come back.
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page, send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so structural fears, or structural fear-causing stuff. How is school set up in a way that causes fear? I, before you jump in, Steve, I want to kind of tease out what you've already said and see if I can't throw some other stuff in there. You mentioned the size of the school, which that varies widely, but okay, size of a school may have something to do with it. Like scheduling, the way that stuff is scheduled can, I think, cause some consternation or some worry. Let's see. I can't remember any of the other ones that you just said, sorry. But I want to add something that I think really does cause fear, and that is the fragmentation of the curriculum.
Yes, right, because that, go ahead and develop it, but to me, that's a major one that I didn't even think to mention earlier. That's a good one to put in there.
Thanks. Yeah, I do. I think this idea of breaking curriculum down into bite-size components, digestible chunks for students, I think that's a noble goal, and you're never going to teach somebody everything. So there is a division of labor. There's natural proclivities to different teachers. You know, we have to cover certain things. So I understand that. And at this point, I'm not even arguing for a different way of doing it. Although, spoiler alert, I actually would argue for a different way of doing that. But at this point, I just want to say that fragmentation is inherently unnatural, and it's not true to knowledge in the way that the sciences, and by that I mean the bodies of knowledge, are actually tied together. And so when you have these false divisions, it can really make a student feel isolated from different bodies of knowledge that they should be bringing to bear on the question in the current class, whatever it may be. And I think that that causes a lot of worry and uncertainty. And I think that leads to quite a bit of fear.
Would recommend to the listener a wonderful little tome. It's bound, but it was an encyclical that John Paul II put out during his papacy, Faith and Reason, Fides et Ratio. In which he made that clear statement that as we have fragmented knowledge, the direct result has been the fragmentation of men's souls. And it just doesn't certainly doesn't put us at rest.
No. Right?
When we use the word school, we're supposed to be referring to a place of leisure. That doesn't mean getting nothing done. That means a place of contemplation, a place where I bring my soul to rest.
Exactly.
The workaday world is where I maybe wear myself out and potentially fragment to some extent because I'm so focused on getting what I need to survive. Mm-hmm. But then God and his grace has given us, you know, 1 in 7 to be at leisure and know that he is God and bring back together man into his wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not sure that school is doing that. Like, so early formal schooling is supposed to form a student who becomes habitual in remembering.
Right.
And I don't mean recalling for the test. I mean bringing back together all the members of his body into union.
Mm-hmm.
Same notion with college. It's to be a university that brings, almost literally brings everything to one word.
A harmonizing time.
A bringing together so that we see how it all fits together. And I regularly meet students at least nervous that they're missing it because they're not sure how they're ever going to use this stuff that they're learning.
Right.
And of course we're so pragmatic today that nothing works because all the machinery's just slamming around under the hood. It's not brought together,
right?
I don't even want to use the word engine, into an organic engine because it's got no life to it. It's got no harmony to it.
Right.
So I think that's one of those things that our listener needs to evaluate in their own life. Am I moving towards, and here's some big words, but I think their meaning is obvious. Am I moving towards a cosmological unity where my whole world makes sense? And is my student following me there? And I think there's something parents can ask themselves as well. They might have turned the daily teaching over to a teacher in a school, but they're still responsible that school and that ultimately they and their home, you know, the solar system is working properly in their home.
Right.
The child is figuring out where he is in relation to God, where he is in relation to others, and fulfilling those two great commandments, to love the Lord God with all the heart, mind, and soul, and the neighbor as theirself. We've talked many times, wisdom and virtue, I think, are summed up in that, those two commandments that Jesus says fulfills the whole law. I think that's what it means to be man.
Yeah. So, good. So Steve, I want to draw attention back to two of the things that you said just now. One of them, I think you would agree with me. So what you said was school, primary school, I think you were kind of talking about elementary school, should shape the student to remember. And I, of course, agree with that. And I want to even go one step further and say primary school does shape the student, right? Whether it forms them rightly or not, that's the whole concern.
Right.
But it is shaping them, right?
And it might very
which
well.
Which I think you're like.
Teaching in the high school, what I inherit from the grades underneath is mm-hmm. either a student that's really starting to get a strong sense of what he's trying to do as a student, or a almost psychotic mess who
yeah.
by this point
yeah, I know.
Has is such a, we refer to them as grade hounds because that's really the only thing they can smell, you know?
Right.
Is this going to be on the test? You know, I'm not a violent man. Most of the time, but
sure.
the contemplations that run through my head when some student asks me, well, how many words does this essay have to be? Do you think my life is consumed
yeah.
counting words? So my stock
right.
reply is long enough, but not too long.
Yeah.
And then they
exactly
like, you know, I answered them in number or something. Well, I didn't answer them in number, which is what they wanted. I answered them in useless yeah. adjectives, Mr. Alec. Right. But
well, but here's the thing. You asked them to make a judgment, but they came to you for a right. judgment. And when you okay, I'm going to use one of the phrases or like buzzwords that I'm learning in one of my grad classes right now. When you transfer agency from yourself as the teacher to the student, when you put it back on them to examine themselves, that is for the student who is not at all used to doing that, that is very scary. And here I want to be the little 3-inch guy saying, not all fear is bad, because that's a fear that we need to live through. Like these students need to come up through that, right? Triumph over that and be able to examine
right.
themselves.
So I would say that there's appropriate fear that is difficult on a teacher because you've just got to smile and love them through it. You know, I face this every year with my mm-hmm. seniors. They look at a 10 to 15 page thesis. It's the biggest thing they've ever written, and it's going to mm-hmm. take all year, and you're going to defend it at the end, and so on and so forth. You can see the fear because they've never done anything like this before. And I can alleviate that fear in two
right.
ways. One is assuring them that many have gone before them and not died. And then two, to reach out. And as you said, it's an issue of relationship, right? Many parents rightly worry that the relationship between their child and teacher may not be what it ought to be. If the size in particular, if you've got several hundred students, then it probably isn't what it ought to be. But for my batch of seniors, mm-hmm. I could take them by the hand and show them. If it's supposed to be showing me that they have all the skills that we've taught them over 4 years to do this, but if they're nervous about it, I can remind them, I can guide them, I can. So that's a legitimate fear. I don't want to remove that fear. I just want to help them with it.
Exactly. Well, I said I had two things that I wanted to come back to that you said, I think they're both super important. We got through one, and we'll get through the other one after the break.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
All right. So coming back, Steve, one of the things that you said earlier that I really want to draw attention to is when you were talking about, well, I don't even know, fear of some kind. You said, yes, this is something that the listener really needs to understand. You know, they should examine themselves. And I really like that you said that. And here's why. It's not altogether clear who exactly the audience is, right? Like we have teachers and parents and students and all kinds of different people listening. But so in that instance, I think it would have been pretty easy to pass the buck, right? To say, it's really important, you know, teachers should be examining their students, or teachers should tell students to examine themselves, or tell parents to examine themselves, or whatever. But you're right. Regardless of the role that you play in this education situation, homeschooling parent, you know, board member, it doesn't matter. You need to examine yourself when it comes to where is this fear popping up and why, right?
Yeah. And and how can I alleviate it?
Exactly. I think that's where we should go with this last little bit of time.
Yeah, I think self-examination is a great place to start alleviating the fear.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is where we started out. A lot of it is what Hamlet's facing in my opening book. I just don't know what's going to happen. The fear of the future is strong in education because we recognize how important education is to ourselves and to our children.
Right.
This is what I see a lot with my contemporaries, people that were in schooling from about 1970 through, 1985 or something like that. Things had radically changed just before we went to school. The baby boomers that we're kind of on the tail end of had doubled the size of classrooms in America. And I think many of us got ripped off. And we didn't realize it till we were adults trying to deal with the education of our children. Or many of us who went off to college came face to face for the first time on the fact that, man, they didn't teach me much.
Right.
And I'm floundering a little bit here trying to figure out how to successfully navigate the much deeper waters of college. And so that's produced a little guy in the back of the head that as those folks grew up feeling like they maybe they've been ripped off a little bit, I didn't get as much attention as I wasn't perhaps taught, quite right. And especially math seems to have done this because I was part of the 70s when they came out with the new math. And that didn't work, so they went back to the old math, which we didn't know because we had been taught the new math. And it was just like, really? It's just numbers, folks. But anyway, not to get off into history too much, the little guy keeps telling modern parents, you don't know what you're doing. And then as we said, I think in one of our first podcasts, this podcast is against the notion that parents shouldn't know what they're doing. Right. This is education is not about the experts. God bless them. We need them. I wish that they really were, more expert in what and not quite so experimental in what they're doing. But parents can know enough to educate, to oversee the education of their children properly. And their fear that they can't do that is often leading to many other fears. And even leading the students to fear, because I had this conversation just a little while ago with my seniors in seminar about leisure and about contemplation and about the nature of school, and they're seniors, they're headed into college next year, and some of them would like to have college be more like seminar than they perceive it's going to be. And I said, well, you can do this. And I gave them several options. Just here in our state in North Carolina where I'm at, Belmont Abbey College in Charlotte has got an interesting kind of two-track Great Books program going. One is the full-fledged kind of St. John's College, Thomas Aquinas College kind of thing, where you would just go for 4 years and it would be all great books and reading through the canon. And then they have a modified one where you're still doing that, but you have enough time to have a regular major in college. And that compromise is because many parents would never let their child, especially if they're paying for their education, would never let that child choose
read
liberal
great
arts
books for 4 years.
Or humanities or great books because that's not practical. We want to make sure that
I remember
a couple $100,000 for an education that when you get out, your paycheck is commensurate.
Right. No, exactly. I remember going to school and change my major when I was a second semester freshman to philosophy. Yeah. And I changed it because I just loved the class. I loved my professor. And I thought, man, this is fantastic. I don't even care what happens after this. I just got to learn this stuff. And, I came home all excited and I told my parents and they were just like, okay, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do? That was always the question. So then I go back to my professor, Dr. Maness, and I say, Dr. Maness, it's not that I care, but I just have to tell my parents something. So just tell me what to tell them. What am I going to do? And he had all these wonderful answers that just left me completely enamored, but were unsatisfactory to my parents at the time, right? He would say stuff like, a degree in philosophy or a liberal arts education prepares you for your last job, not for your first job. Which I think is, we could spend 10 minutes yep. unpacking that yep. or longer. You know, that's something that you can really chew on. But, my parents wanted me to that's be able right. to chew that's on right. some food that I had
and that's
bought because I had
forms
money.
Of fear is the fear that love mistakenly brings about. Okay, your parents are not expressing yeah. illegitimate fear. They want you to do well. They want you to have a good job. They want you to often what parents want is their children to exceed them.
Right.
To have it better than they had it, which at some point has to right. break down. That's not sustainable indefinitely. But
definitely. Yeah.
Right. But it's legitimate. It's out of love. They're not wishing you evil, they're wishing you good. But somewhere along the line, mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. have become so work consumed that we're afraid of yep. leisure and developing the tools of leisure, developing the tools of real independent free thought. We want to be able to monetize. I hate that word, but it's the right word. We want to be able to. Yep. We want to be able to make money off of whatever we do.
Education. It's the right word here.
It's got to be practical or it's not real. And, mm-hmm. Close to 30 minutes has frittered away again. And yet we've just begun to unpack this. I'm not saying that we're going to necessarily do another podcast on this subject, but I think that we'll come back to this theme regularly because so much good education comes from a place of rest and peace and joy, which I maintain the opposite. If you want to know what the opposite of what we've been talking about today, mm-hmm. it's joy, mm-hmm. it's delight, it's wonder, it's curiosity, it's cheer.
Yep.
Yes. As Shakespeare often has cheer. One of his mirth. Characters say, "Marry, marry, good man." And sometimes he means go get married to a good woman, which is a major part of joy right. in life. But often he just simply means, yeah, stop worrying.
Be That's
happy
cheer.
With the fact yeah. that whatever is happening in the play is a good thing, and mm-hmm. I think this is key to good education that we find ways to instill love and joy and delight in our students rather than bearing down upon them with more and more pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of got David Bowie and Queen playing in my head here under pressure.
Your references get me sometimes.
Sorry, but
that's all right.
But some of our audience will know the song I'm referencing, where yeah. or Billy Joel had a good one as well. A lot of musicians have perceived this fear that's in our culture and this pain that we bear of being under pressure. Their definition yeah. of what's pressing upon them might be different than mine. I don't think culture is always pressing upon us unwanted rules, but
good.
But education.
Well, so let's wrap it up there and kind of highlight our solutions that we threw out, but maybe didn't name. Self-examination is a way to alleviate fear. Stepping back from the monetization mindset is a way to reduce or alleviate fear. Finding community is a way to alleviate fear. And then you want to add another one?
I think the thing we bang louder than any other drum on this podcast is the right final solution to fear, and that is the cultivation of wisdom and virtue. If your good. Focus as a parent is on raising a good person, you're good. You're successful. Fear not. And fear not, because God is with you. That's God's purpose for your child too. And all these other things, right? The things that make us fearful, what should I wear and what should I eat and what college should I go to, et cetera, et cetera. Those will be added if you're seeking the kingdom of God, which I believe is inherent in the notion of cultivating wisdom and virtue.
Good. Good stuff. All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot, and we will see you next time.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.